You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting for WFHB, this is Brandon Blewett.
And I'm Noelle Herhusky-Schneider. This is the WFHB Local News for Monday, April 1st, 2024.
In today's feature report, local journalist Dave Askins of the B-Square Bulletin reads an item from his weekly newsletter for the WFHB Local News. More in the bottom half of tonight's newscast.
What we're looking for from the community is also people that have perspectives that they want to share about current events.
Any kind of topic that's not being covered in mainstream media is much more impactful than sort of this passive form of textbook learning that most students are exposed to.
Local high school students Sophia Cryutu and Iris Jones are on a mission to change the way American kids find out about what's going on in the world. Learn more later in the show on a new episode of Activate. But first, your daily headlines.
On March 27th, at the Bloomington City Council meeting, members of the community addressed the council during public comment and asked the council to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. The first commenter was Bloomington resident Bob Arnove, who said he was part of a multi-faith coalition here to speak about the need for a ceasefire in Palestine and Gaza.
I'm Bob Arnove, a resident of Bloomington since 1972 and therefore a bona fide Hoosier. Also, I'm Jewish and a member of Congregation Beth Shalom. My identification with Judaism is rooted in the religion's fundamental commitment to tikkun olam, to repairing the world, and to have an abiding commitment to working for social justice and peace in the world. Judaism holds that whoever saves a world, person also saves the world. In saving the world, there is a fundamental question. If not now, when? The now is the stressing need for citizens around the world with the representative bodies to call for an immediate and enduring ceasefire to the hostilities between Israelis and Palestinians, to halt the catastrophic death and destruction wrought by the warring sides, the need for an immediate, unimpeded, massive humanitarian aid for the people of Gaza, as well as for the exchange of hostages and political prisoners, and the urgent need to take concrete steps toward a just and lasting peace with political determination and statehood for the Palestinian people. These are the principles put forward by a resolution proposed to the Bloomington City Council by a multi-faith coalition of organizations committed to putting an end to the wanton death and destruction occurring in the Palestinian territories and in Israel as well. Many people on the line here are part of that coalition.
Another resident, Kay Weinberg, spoke on the complexities that not all Jewish people share the same mindsets.
Hi, my name is Kay Weinberg. I'm here to speak as a Jew about anti-Semitism and the difference between that and anti-Zionism. Given how little has truly changed over hundreds of years in the violent relationship of white America to black people, to people indigenous to this land, to immigrants, it should not be a real surprise how much we need to continue to sharpen our shared understanding of racism. Even still, even given how clearly we have so far to go, it is incredibly surprising to me how convincing the conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism is to so many people. We have to learn to do better, to learn to hold complexity when it comes to racism. To be truly anti-racist, we must learn to think clearly together. To see all Jews as archetypes of victimhood is just as racist as seeing them as demonic gremlins. In fact, this is one of the fundamental racist ideas of the modern day. To dehumanize people in a positive way and see them as perfect tokens, incapable of doing wrong or truly acting at all. And so forgetting that all people are capable of a full range of human experiences, feelings, and capacities. People are not tokens, concepts, fodder for inspiration or storytelling, or pawns in a geopolitical or narrative strategy, but fully fellow humans. When a friend is doing horrible violence, it is an act of love to stay their hand. This is the act of love we need to perform towards Israeli Jews. The trauma of historic anti-Semitism weighs heavily on all Jews and their friends. For non-Jews, this historic violence means taking responsibility for the historic part in that violence by now making the mental effort to hold complexity. This is my ask. To understand that Jewish trauma may be clouding thinking in Israel is an act of love. To see the traumatic echoes of the Holocaust in some Jews' attempts to create a military ethnostate is an act of love. Finally, I'll say that it's clear that there's a current of anti-Semitism and Palestinian resistance, and after nearly 100 years of displacement and violence by Jews, it would be strange if there were not. But those who truly care about ending long centuries of anti-Jewish violence to try to hold some of the complexity, if the Israeli right wing succeeds in what they're doing, what will that do for anti-Semitism into the future? Thank you.
Later in the meeting, the council voted to reject an ordinance to establish Lower Cascades Park as a historic district. City Clerk Nicole Bolden introduced the ordinance.
The Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission, after a public hearing February 23, 2024, recommended that the park be designated historic with a rating as contributing. This rating was based upon certain historic and architectural criteria set forth in Bloomington Municipal Code 8.08.010E, entitled Historic District Criteria. Local designation will provide the protection needed to ensure that this property is preserved.
Historic Preservation Program Manager Noah Sandweiss presented the staff's recommendation to establish the historic district. Sandweiss has also shared that the presentation was created by the former program manager, Gloria Colombrana.
This district would consist of Lower Cascades Parks, which is a section of Greater Cascade Park in the northern end of town, and the Greater District is currently under review by the State Historic Preservation Office, and pending that review will be sent on to the National Park Service for listing in the National Register of Historic Places. The Historic Preservation Commission finds that the Lower Cascades Park is eligible for local listing on the grounds that it has significant character, interest, or value as part of the development or heritage or cultural characteristics of the city, state, or nation, or is associated with a person who played a significant role in local, state, or national history, and exemplifies the cultural, political, economic, social, and historic heritage of the community. Additionally, the commission believes that Cascades Park, in particular, features built by the Works Progress Administration in the 1930s, exemplify the built environment in an era of history characterized by distinctive architectural style.
Council member Hopi Stossberg asked if the Parks Department was involved in the decision. Sandweiss said they had been in communication with the Parks Department. Stossberg asked Bloomington Parks and Recreation Operations and Development Division Director Tim Street a series of questions about how they currently maintain the park.
The Parks Department has been maintaining this park for 100 years. I will ask you, were you aware before this ordinance came before you that those structures were historic, that that limestone was special, that that build might have any kind of significance?
Sure.
Okay.
Good evening.
It was a yes or no question. I don't need, I have a couple follow-ups on that. So have you been in your maintenance and care of that park kind of paying attention to that concept when you have been working in that area?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. So does the Parks Department have some kind of a plan to increase development or to substantially change that that might threaten the current kind of status quo of how you have been caring for this property?
We don't currently have any plans that I believe would threaten any of the resources that are listed on there as contributing resources, with the exception of maybe the limestone walls in places along the creek where the creek has been channelized that have been degraded. Those continue to have problems with erosion and climate change and heavy rainfall and will need to be addressed. But currently, no, we take care of the historic resources. We recognize it's our oldest park. It's very important. We manage for the history of the park as well.
Thank you. And I drove down there today, so I'm glad that you mentioned that erosion that continues along that stream bank. If this historical designation was approved, what kind of extra steps would the Parks Department have to go through in order to manage that stream bank erosion, for example?
Sure. And I'll just add that it's not necessarily just the Parks Department. There is a collective effort down there between City of Bloomington Utilities, which is responsible for stormwater, between Public Works, which maintains the road, the Parks Department, which has the property and maintains the assets down there. So certainly we look at that as a city collectively. The recent project, we did replace a lot of the damaged old wall with the limestone wall that you see down there now. That was to make it safer, to allow for climate change, for the creek to have room to flood, things like that. I anticipate, sure, there might be some extra coordination with the HPC to ensure, hey, what is the section of wall we're working on? Some of it is original WPA wall. Some of it is replacement wall from the 1970s that looks like the original WPA wall. Some of it is gabion baskets of stone just to hold things in place. Some of it is concrete. So there's a whole mix. So it would just depend on the site.
Councilmember Matt Flaherty said he would not support the ordinance and explained his reasoning.
I also won't be supporting this. I kind of have a handful of concerns. Well, first, I just think it's really not necessary. We've got 90, 85-year-old structures that we've protected just fine all that time. I think it's a value of the city of Bloomington. I think nothing's in danger in terms of the WPA structures. A couple of concerns. One is around accessibility. I heard probably three or four statements from different staff about the commission generally recognizing other considerations, balancing things, using common sense, looking at the big picture, not an either or approach. And with all due respect to the HPC, my experience over 4.5 years of council service is actually quite the opposite. Over and over, the HPC comes to us and says, we only look at the history. That's the only thing we look at. Other considerations, equity, transportation access, those aren't things we look at. We look at history only and whether or not this is historically significant. And they say that's the council's job to weigh and balance these trade-offs, which is true when we're considering designations like we are tonight. But earlier I asked questions about what happens if we grant this designation, and it puts authority exclusively in the hands of the HPC to determine how to balance those interests. And if they did balance those interests in practice, or if I felt that way, I might be more comfortable with it. But again, that's really not my experience. Councilmember Rosenberger just cited a recent example about accessibility that the HPC showed an inability to balance with accessibility. So in particular, we have a transportation plan that calls for a multi-use path to give safe, high comfort access to Bloomington High School North and others on the north side. That's an adopted city plan. I take our city goals and plans seriously. I think we need to move to implement them. There have been three or four different designs considered for Cascades. One of them was a pilot proposal, of course, that closed the road to cars, opening it to everybody else for a period of time. There was an incorrect statement made earlier about that being unpopular. We actually have survey data from that period. 171 people encountered that pilot, took surveys for it. Right around 70% of people said they were in favor of continuing permanent conversion to a non-car path through the middle of a park. Something like Switchyard Park with the B-line or Bryan Park with the center of the park path along the creek. So that's the closest thing to data we have actually about this road issue and the access to a multi-use path. There are other options besides road conversion. In any case, none of that's actually of historic significance. Yes, the road's been there a long time. 200 years ago, guess what? There weren't cars on it, you know? It's not the issue, it's the wrong tool. We heard from a variety of folks, including folks who've served on HPC in the past, that the motivation was to keep the road open to cars. And again, it's really just not the right tool for that. And so I guess for all those reasons, I can't support this. Thank you.
The council voted 3-6 on the ordinance. With 6 members voting no on the ordinance did not get approval. The Bloomington City Council will meet again on April 3rd.
During the Monroe County Council meeting on March 26th, the council heard a request to amend the 2024 salary ordinance to include 6 new positions at the county jail. Sheriff Deputy Phil Parker discussed why the sheriff's office is seeking these positions for the jail transition team.
Well, I know there's a whole lot to say here about the transition team other than I hope that the 7 folks up there are as excited about this as we are. We've come to this place today. And just very quickly, we are already in the process of moving forward to this based on your decision today. We've got applicants in the queue. We already have part-time officers that are trained up that can step in almost immediately, and then we'll just kind of recycle the part-time officers. So whenever we go for throttle up here, we'll move very, very quickly. I just talked to Corey about the office space. We should be up and running with that pretty soon. And then we'll start taking our direction from Corey and from Scott Carnegie from DLZ as to when we bring these, when we're bringing these people on. But again, just to reiterate, it will take us some time, even if we hired, you know, in the next few weeks here, to bring them up to speed on the training. And so we anticipate that intersecting, that the time that they're really, really needed, where the design phase is already started and they're really needed, we'll have these new folks up to speed on their training and we can start pulling people for that transition team. So I think we're in a pretty good place here.
Councilmember Kate Wiltz asked how money generated from local income tax would fund the new positions. Both council members Jeff McKim and Marty Hawk responded, strategizing on methods to fund the jail transition team.
I had a question about the correctional lit and its capacity to fund this, as well as what we've already talked about it funding, which I believe were those other positions. And I maybe am behind on discussions because I know I missed a meeting. But this seems to be a pretty full amount of what we're anticipating getting annually with the current lit level. So I guess I don't want to necessarily jump over to item C, but they seem very related to me, unless I've missed something.
Councilor McKibben, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I don't believe that the correction lit with the current rate would support everything we possibly would want. So, yeah, I think
we're going to have to, not for positions, but when we're talking about the healthcare contract, we'll probably have to fit that in one of the existing jail budgets, either the PS lit or the general fund. That's my belief. I think that this is, yeah, I mean, unless it would just take them forever to, to hire these people and it will, but that's, we don't want it to take forever for them to hire. We want them to move. So that's my belief, that we'll have to find somewhere else to, because we haven't put anything in this fund yet. We've just discussed it. So
right.
I feel like this is, the numbers worked out that it seems like these expenditures fit well in that corrections lit, but at least that's my thought. I don't know if Councilor Hawk has an opinion, but I think we'll have to find somewhere else for the other.
I think what we decided at last meeting when we had this discussion, that in order to make sure that it would pass, it might take two readings of the salary ordinance, that we would, on the safe side, go ahead and read it this evening for the first reading. And if we don't all agree, then it would take a second reading to get it. So that's the reason why it's on here for tonight.
Okay.
Just to make it, was just put that safety net in there.
But I mean, do you agree we'll have to find a different location for the remainder of the health care contract?
Right. I think we're probably going to, you know, we'll have to decide at that point whether we're going to take that out of the general fund or the public safety lit.
That's fine.
The council voted to approve the salary ordinance amendment unanimously. The council will continue to finalize the six positions for the jail transition team in the coming weeks. The next Monroe County Council meeting will take place on April 9th at the Nat U Hill Room.
In today's feature report, local journalist Dave Askins of the B-Square Bulletin reads an item from his weekly newsletter for the WFHB Local News. We turn to Askins for more.
The B-Square Bulletin sends out an emailed morning bulletin every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can sign up for the Morning Bulletin by visiting bsquarebulletin.com and clicking on the tab labeled Subscribe. Here's an item from a recent installment. Lower Cascades Park Historic District designation failed 3-6.
Voting for historic district protection for Lower Cascades Park on Wednesday night were just Dave Rollo, Andy Ruff, and Courtney Daly, which meant the ordinance failed. This basic outcome was already reported on Thursday as part of the B-Square's write-up of the meeting, but I hope eventually to write up the deliberations by council members in a little bit more detail. In the meantime, I think it's worth making clear some of the background facts of the matter because there were some incorrect or at least incomplete statements made by council members at Wednesday's meeting. First, about appointments to the city's Historic Preservation Commission, the HPC, Hopi Stossberg claimed that, quote, council does not approve mayoral appointments, end quote. In fact, that is exactly how appointments to the HPC work. Here's the wording in city code, quote, all members shall be appointed by the mayor, subject to the approval of the common council. Matt Flaherty made a claim about the closest thing to data that the city has on the topic of people's attitudes towards the use of the Lower Cascades Road as a multi-use path. The full quote was, we actually have survey data from that period. 171 people encountered that pilot, took surveys for it. Right around 70% of people said they were in favor of continuing permanent conversion to a non-car path through the middle of a park. Something like Switchyard Park with the beeline or Bryan Park with the center of the park path along the creek. That's the closest thing to data we actually have about this road issue and the access to a multi-use path, end quote. But the city's website includes a page about the pilot closure, and the data available there is more robust than the numbers that Flaherty was working from. The survey results show that 459 people who encountered the pilot responded to a survey question about attitudes towards keeping the road segment as a, quote, family-friendly, multi-use trail. You have to eyeball the bars, but the proportion of people who said that they definitely do want that road segment to be used as a multi-use trail looks like it landed around 53%. If you add in the people who said they somewhat want the road segment to be used as a multi-use trail, you get to around 56%. The percentage of survey respondents who said they definitely do not want the segment to be used as a multi-use trail was around 33.5%. If you add in the people who said they somewhat don't want the road segment used as a multi-use trail, and you get to something like 38.5%. So clearly more than half of people who visited the pilot and completed the survey, around 56%, were in favor of keeping the road configured the way it was in the pilot. But 56% is not 70%. A corresponding question on an impact survey conducted by the city asked, how strongly would you support permanently closing both lanes of the 0.6-mile pilot? The question asked respondents to rate their support on a scale of 1 to 7. The average rating among 326 respondents was 2.3. That does not appear to indicate a lot of support. What's interesting to look through are the survey results over time, which the city has also included on its webpage. I think it's fair to say that those results over time reflect the impact of periodic organized advocacy against the closure of the road to car traffic. Still, I think that if you say that the, quote, closest thing to data that's available is a sample of 171 people, 70% of whom were in favor of the multi-use trail, then that's an incomplete characterization of the information that the city has made public on its website. Until next week, this has been Dave Askins with the B-Square Bulletin for WFHB.
Local high school student Sophia Cryutu was on a trip abroad when she realized she lives in a media bubble. Now, Sophia and her friend Iris Jones are on a mission to change the way American kids receive and perceive information about what's going on in the world. Their nonprofit, Global Learners, is looking for fresh perspectives to share in Bloomington classrooms. And maybe you've got a story to share. Learn more on a new episode of Activate, coming your way right now on the WFHB Local News.
Welcome to Activate,
featuring real people working for positive change in our community, encouraging you to get involved, live your passion, and make a difference.
Hi, I'm Sophia Crayutu.
Hi, I'm Iris Jones, and we're from Global Learners.
So Global Learners is an organization completely run by high school students, and it's aimed towards depolarizing and promoting current events education to K through 8th graders all across the U.S. and abroad.
We are run entirely separate from the two big high schools here in Bloomington. We're run entirely separate from Bloomington High School North and South, although we do have students from both North and South.
So we founded the organization in June of 2023. I was in Romania at the time, and I saw this complete gap in education that kids were getting. I came back to the United States and I thought, why aren't kids learning? I felt like I was in kind of a bubble. And I wanted to share that mission and share what was happening in Romania with these students.
Yeah, so last year was my first year of high school. I'm a sophomore this year at Bloomington North, and I took a really amazing class freshman year of high school. It was a social sciences class, and surprisingly enough, that was my first real exposure to current events education outside of the basic political stuff. And I think that had I gotten an exposure to that level of current events education prior to ninth grade, I would have had much more of a motivation to do more, and I would have been much more motivated to educate myself.
We thought current events, it's a very vague kind of general topic, but, and there are many facets of current events that we cover in Global Learners. So for example, my subject that I focus on is law and public policy, and Iris's is medical innovations. And we write monthly articles on these topics, and we aim to publicize these to schools and formulate lesson plans around them. So we focus on a new topic within current events that we each focus on every month.
So something that's really amazing about this organization is that we're targeted towards students, like students K to eighth grade, like Sophia mentioned previously. And I think that that's something that makes us unique, is that we target younger students. And part of my barrier to gaining access to current events education and gaining interest to that level of education is that I just didn't know how I would be able to impact anything in any regard. And part of our mission is to educate students, and this is part of our main initiative that we've been working towards, is to educate students on not only why you should be interested in these topics, but also what you can do about these topics.
I think a lot of the things that students are learning is, you know, it's through a style of passive learning. So the teachers are very much talking at them, and it doesn't teach students how to actively problem solve and learn these skills that we're incorporating into our lesson plans. So I think that's kind of where I saw a gap in education and where I wanted to fix it with this mission. So a big part of our organization is gaining global perspectives. And I think one of the major ways which we've done this is through interviews with both professors, students from other countries. And what we're looking for from the community is also people that have perspectives that they want to share about current events. And if, for example, if you're from Argentina, we would love to hear a perspective on what's happening in your country that you want to share and you feel like has been underpublicized in news.
Hearing from a student in Argentina, as Sophia mentioned, or a student anywhere in the world who has a different perspective on an event or any kind of topic that's not being covered in mainstream media is much more impactful and is much more helpful to their education than sort of this passive form of textbook learning that most students are exposed to.
Yeah, so we have set up a website. It's globallearners.international, and we are currently accepting donations, so we can register for a 501c3 nonprofit status. If you would like to participate in an interview with us, donate to our cause, or publicize Global Learners, visit our website, which is www.globallearners.international.
Again, the website is globallearners.international.
I'm Sophia Crayutu.
Thank you for listening. I'm Iris Jones. We're from Global Learners.
Students need a global education.
You've been listening to Activate, true stories from friends and neighbors who stand up for what they believe in. Activate is a partnership between WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build a strong, healthy, and engaged community with production support from students in the media school at Indiana University. You can learn more about volunteer opportunities in the WFHB listening area online at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. That's bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org.
So
Support for WFHB Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. More information online at mpisolarenergy.com.